happen in the motorcade route. Something, I repeat, has happened in the motorcade route.
Welcome to The End of Innocence. I'm your host, John Young. Over the next several episodes, we'll be answering a lot of questions that have been emailed into me about Oswald's time at the police department before his death. Last week, we looked at the police lineups that Oswald was placed in and how fair or unfair they were. This week, we keep our focus on the weekend of the assassination and how things played out in those 48 hours that changed history and our lives forever. As we continue to answer listeners' questions, this week our questions come from Dan in St. Paul, Minnesota. Dan asks, was the Dallas police upset that the FBI didn't inform them of Lee Harvey Oswald being in Dallas? Did a note that Oswald supposedly wrote to FBI agent James Hostie truly get destroyed? And was J. Edgar Hoover mad at the Dallas police over Oswald's death? We'll try to answer those this week.
This man's apparent subversive background, was there any surveillance, were police aware of his presence in Dallas?
We and the police department here did not know he was in Dallas. I understand the FBI did know that he was in Dallas.
Chief, do you normally have a practice for the FBI to inform the police?
Yes.
Chief, do you have...
We did not have...
But you were not informed.
We had not been informed of this man.
What you just heard was Dallas Police Chief Jesse Curry being somewhat critical of the FBI for not letting them know that Lee Harvey Oswald was in Dallas. A short time later, after what was an unpleasant phone call with FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover, Curry had this to say to the reporters in the hallway.
There has been some information that has gone out. I want to correct anything that might have been misinterpreted or misunderstood, and that is regarding information that the FBI might have had about this man. I do not know if and when the FBI has interviewed this man. The FBI is under no obligation to come to us with any information concerning anyone. They have cooperated with us in the past 100%. Anytime there's any information that they feel that might be helpful to us, they have always come to it with us. Last night someone told me, I don't even know who it was, that the FBI did know this man was in the city and had interviewed him. I wish to say this, of my knowledge, I do not know this to be a fact, and I don't want anybody to get the wrong impression that I am accusing the FBI of not cooperating or of withholding information, because they are under no obligation to us, but have always cooperated with us 100%.
Chief, just
and
to make
I
this...
do not know if and when they have ever interviewed this man.
Just to make this clear, Chief, you were talking about Oswald and the reports that the FBI had information about him before the assassination.
That's correct. And I wish to make this statement that I do not know, of my knowledge, whether they have anything on this man or not, or whether or not they have ever interviewed him.
This was an impression.
I do say this, that they have always in the past, if they had information that they thought would be helpful to us, they have come to us with it.
Had you been given an erroneous or unreliable report that they had some information about him?
I don't know. Someone last night told me this, and I don't even know who told me, but they just said that last night that the FBI did know this man was here. I wish to make this statement that I do not know whether they knew it or not. And I certainly am not saying that the FBI knew something that we should have known, didn't tell us. They're under no obligation to us, but they have always cooperated.
The FBI monitored and checked in on Lee and Marina Oswald for months leading up to the assassination. On November 5th, while Oswald was working at the Texas School Book Depository, FBI agents James Hostie and Gary Wilson interviewed Ruth Payne at her home. Ruth Payne was who Marina and the kids were staying with while Lee was living in a rooming house at 1026 North Beckley, close to his job at the depository. Payne told agents that she didn't know Oswald's address, but that he had been at her house the previous weekend. On November 13th, Oswald visited the Dallas FBI office and left a note for James Hostie, apparently as a follow-up from the FBI's November 5th visit to the Ruth Payne's house. Hostie said that the note said, quote, "If I did not stop talking to his wife, he would take action against the FBI," end quote. According to Hostie, he flushed Oswald's note down the toilet on the order of his boss, Gordon Shanklin, the special agent in charge of the Dallas FBI office. Despite Hostie's testimony, Shanklin denied any knowledge of the note or ordering it to be destroyed. Here's James Hostie talking about his involvement with Oswald and the now famous note that he destroyed. This interview would appear on the British documentary, The Men Who Killed Kennedy.
The FBI in Washington had at first given their full cooperation to the Dallas police. Their field agent in Dallas, in charge of the Oswald file prior to the assassination, was James Hostie. He was directed to help the police in their initial interrogation of Oswald. But within hours, these orders were changed.
I was approached by one of the senior agents from the counterintelligence squad and was told that there were now new orders, and I was not to talk to Oswald anymore, and I was not to cooperate with the police department in any manner concerning Oswald's background. I have since determined that those orders came directly from Assistant Director William Sullivan, who was in charge of the Foreign Counterintelligence Squad. He was also the person who had direct liaison with the National Security Council. The National Security Council is the President, the Vice President, the Secretary of State, and the Secretary of Defense. That's about as high as you can get.
Hostie's Washington superiors knew much more about Oswald than they were willing to divulge. Consequently, his surveillance of Oswald had also been based on incomplete information.
I was not aware of the fact that President Kennedy, through the CIA, was attempting to overthrow Castro, and that Fidel Castro had threatened President Kennedy. Had I known this, I would have immediately been concerned about Lee Oswald, because we knew he was pro-Castro. Had I known this, then we could have put a whole different light on the situation.
It was here in Neely Street that Hostie first attempted to contact the Oswalds in March 1963. His visit was routine because of their links with Russia. But they had moved on. Later in the year, Hostie spoke to Marina alone, prompting an angry note from Oswald, hand-delivered to the FBI 3 weeks before the assassination.
The note, which I subsequently determined was from Lee Oswald, was unsigned. It was quite short. It just said, if you want to talk to me, come talk to me. Don't bother my wife. I don't want you talking to her without my being there. If you don't cease and desist on this, I will take this up with the proper authorities, or words to that effect. I had thought it was somebody else at first, and just put it into my file drawer until I had a chance to look into it further. Late on the afternoon of November 24th, the day Oswald was killed, I was told by Supervisor Ken Howe to go to the office of Gordon Shanklin, the agent in charge of the Dallas office. He wanted to see me. I was called in there, and Gordon Shanklin reached down into one of his desk drawers and took out the note and handed it to me and said, "Here, I don't want to ever see this again." He said, "Oswald is dead now. There can't be any trial." Now, this was the reason why it was legal to get rid of this note at this time, since there was no trial, and President Johnson was adamantly opposed to any hearings. The FBI then felt it was all right to dispose of this note. I then tried to tear it up and throw it in the wastebasket. Gordon Shanklin said, "Don't get it out of here. I don't want to ever see it again." So I then took it out, and I was going to burn it, but that would have been a little bit messy, so I thought it would be much easier to flush it down the toilet, and that would get rid of it permanently. It wasn't till a week later that President Johnson gave in to congressional pressure and called the Warren Commission together. Of course, by this time, the FBI and probably the CIA and the Navy Department and the State Department had suppressed a lot of different things, and this was one of probably many of them.
So there you have it, Dan. In response to your first question, was the Dallas police upset that the FBI didn't tell them that Lee Harvey Oswald was in Dallas? It sure sounded that way from Police Chief Jesse Curry. Of course, his tone changed after a phone call with J. Edgar Hoover. And then you heard from James Hostie himself, where he said he destroyed the note that Oswald wrote him. Was it a threat? Sure sounds that way. Now to Dan's last question. Was J. Edgar Hoover mad at the Dallas police over Oswald's death? According to the Warren Commission, quote, "The basic decision to move Oswald at an announced time and in the presence of news media was never carefully thought through by Chief Jesse Curry in the Homicide Bureau."
Chief, do you have any concern for the safety of your prisoner in view of the high feeling among the people of Dallas over the assassination of the president?
No, but precautions, necessary precautions will be taken, of course, but I'm not, I don't think that that the people will try to take the prisoner away from us.
Do you regard the county jail as a more secure place to house the prisoner? Is that why you're transferring him from the city jail?
It's customary after a man is filed on that he be transferred. We only keep him in our jail until he is filed on. After he's been filed on, well, then he's the sheriff's responsibility.
Will there be extra police at the county jail to assure
I don't
his...
know.
When sheriff will Deckard. He be transferred, Chief?
I do not know.
Where is the county jail?
At the end, about a block from where the president was killed.
Curry and Fritz had agreed Saturday evening that Oswald should not be moved at night, but their discussion apparently went little further. That's all the Warren Report has to say about the details of planning Oswald's transfer. And if you listened to last week's episode, the police department was notified about threatening phone calls warning that if they didn't change their plans on moving Oswald, he would be killed. We listened to Officer Billy Grammer, who took the phone call, saying that he believed that the threat came from Jack Ruby himself. But those warnings did not result in any changes being made to the Oswald transfer plans. Eventually, Oswald was let out of the basement around 11:20 a.m. Central Standard Time. As he was escorted through the doors by police, a crowd of reporters had gathered outside of the basement doorway. Here's the original audio from Oswald being shot as he enters the basement.
Being let out by Captain Fritz. There is a prisoner. There is Lee Oswald.
He's been shot. He's been shot. Lee Oswald has been shot. There's a man with a gun. It's absolute panic. Absolute panic here in the basement of Dallas Police Headquarters. Detectives have their guns drawn. Oswald has been shot. There is no question about it. Oswald has been shot.
Detective Jim LaVell was handcuffed to Oswald during the transfer. If you watch the video of the incident, he's the cop wearing the big white hat. Here's Detective LaVell talking about what happened.
You were handcuffed to him.
I was handcuffed to him and also had a hold of the waistband of his trousers. I saw this man come from the crowd, and at the time he emerged from this crowd of people, he was not more than 6 or 7 feet from me.
Did you see the gun in his hand as he came?
I saw the gun in his hand as he emerged from the crowd. But being such a short distance from me, I had no time to say anything.
Now, when Oswald fell to the ground, was he unconscious at that point?
I would say if he was not, he was nearly so. Just as soon as my partner on the other side, Mr. Graves, grabbed Jack's hand with the gun in such a manner that he couldn't fire it anymore.
Did you recognize him when he came through?
Yes, I have known Jack Ruby for a number of years, and I recognized him just as soon as he emerged from the crowd.
In the ensuing chaos in the basement, Ruby was contained and arrested, and Oswald was immediately taken to the emergency room at Parkland Hospital.
Mr. Oswald died at 1:07 our time in the operating room of the gunshot wound which he had received.
When Oswald died, everyone was quick to realize that the person who was allegedly the lone gun assassin of the president was now dead. This meant that the American people would never be able to hear a defense from Oswald. Based on Oswald's claims about being an innocent patsy, he surely would have attempted to make a defense of himself. Even the Warren Report states the obvious about this moment in American history, saying, quote, almost immediately speculation arose that Ruby had acted on behalf of members of a conspiracy who had planned the killing of President Kennedy and wanted to silence Oswald, end quote. J. Edgar Hoover was exasperated on the afternoon of November 24, 1963. President John F. Kennedy had been dead for 2 days when the head of the FBI received word that his killer, Lee Harvey Oswald, had been murdered while in police custody. He knew who to blame, too. Dallas Police Chief Jesse Curry and Homicide Captain Will Fritz. He said so in a memo written just about 45 minutes after the doctors declared Oswald dead at Parkland Hospital. Hoover would say, quote, last night we received a call from our Dallas office from a man talking in a calm voice and saying he was a member of a committee organized to kill Oswald. We at once notified the chief of police, and he assured us Oswald would be given significant protection. This morning, we called the chief of police again, warning of his possibility of some effort against Oswald, and he again assured us adequate protection would be given. However, this was not done, end quote. Frustration toward the Dallas Police Department was not isolated to this incident. allowing a gunman into police headquarters to kill the most important suspect in American history. Sealed documents released in October 2017 associated with the JFK assassination make it clear that Hoover had many problems with the Dallas Police Department, from its reliance on federal resources to its loose-lipped approach to public relations. The murder of Oswald was just the latest screw-up, and Hoover spared no blame. Hoover would say, quote, "Oswald having been killed today after our warnings to the Dallas Police Department is inexcusable. It will allow, I am afraid, a lot of civil rights people to raise a lot of hell because he was handcuffed and had no weapon. There are bound to be some elements of our society who will holler their heads off that his civil rights were violated, which they were." End quote. During questioning with Warren Commission staffers in 1964, Chief Jesse Curry said that he didn't recall any FBI agents relaying a message from Washington that Hoover was concerned with Oswald's security. Curry would say, quote, "I don't remember anyone coming to me and telling me that." End quote. Here's an excerpt from a phone conversation between J. Edgar Hoover and now President Lyndon Johnson that took place on November 29, 1963, 1 week after the assassination of President Kennedy. Hoover in the conversation voices his displeasure with the Dallas police, including Dallas Police Chief Jesse Curry and Dallas Homicide Captain Will Fritz.
"Now, this fellow Rubenstein is a very shady character, has a bad record, street brawler, fighter, that sort of thing. And in the place in Dallas, if a fellow came in there and couldn't pay his bill completely, Rubenstein would beat the very devil out of him and throw him out of the place. He was that kind of a fella. He didn't drink, didn't smoke, boasted about that. He is what I would put in the category one of his egomaniacs. He likes to be in the limelight. He knew all the police in that white light district where the joints are in there. And he also let them come in, see the show, get food, and get liquor and so forth. That's how I think he got into police headquarters, because they accepted him as kind of a police character hanging around police headquarters. And for that reason, raised no question. Of course, they never made any moves, as the pictures show, even when they saw him approaching this fella and got up right to him and pressed his pistol against Oswald's stomach. Neither of the police officers on either side made any moves to push him away or to grab him. It wasn't until after the gun was fired that they then moved. Now, of course, that is not the highest degree of efficiency, so to say. Secondly, the chief of police admits that he moved him in the morning as a convenience and at the request of the motion picture people who wanted to have daylight. He should have moved him at night, but he didn't. And, those derelictions in that phase.
So, Dan, to answer your final question, was FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover upset with the Dallas Police Department for allowing Jack Ruby just to stroll in the basement and kill Lee Harvey Oswald in front of dozens of police officers and news reporters? I would say, yeah, he was pissed. Dan, I hope we answered your questions. If you like what you hear every week and want to learn more about the assassination, please pick up my book, The End of Innocence, The Assassination of President John F. Kennedy. It's available right now on Amazon. Or you can find it at www.endofinnocencejfk.com. And hey, send me your comments about the book or this podcast at endofinnocencejfk@gmail.com. Also this week, I'd like to announce that I'll be speaking at the Citizens Against Political Assassinations, or otherwise known as CAPA, conference in Dallas in November. If you'd like to get a signed copy of my book or just meet and talk about the case, I'd love to see you there in November. The conference runs from Friday, November 22nd to Sunday, November 24th. I will be speaking about my book, The End of Innocence, and also I'll be speaking about the presence of professional assassins in Dealey Plaza the day President Kennedy was killed. I'll also be speaking about a second arrest in the Texas Theater that day. You can get tickets for the conference at www.capa-us.org. Hope to see you there.